Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
If you want to practice and improve your English in a fun and creative way, please visit our website www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru.
Great beginning.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's how do you call it? Benefice.
Oh yeah.
Landish's benefice.
How long have you been talking?
I don't know, just a couple of
minutes. She has been just laughing for about 30 minutes. I'm just listening.
Put your fist in your mouth.
That's okay. It's all right.
That's the key for you. Not for your average man.
All right. So, hello.
So, I see it's contagious.
So anyway, you are now in St. Petersburg. How was the trip?
It was good.
Good.
it's exhausting.
Good, like the conic.
But it was good.
Have you seen any part of this Universiade? How is it pronounced?
University Olympics.
University Olympics?
Well, that's how my American friend who lives in Kazan calls it.
Okay, all right.
University Olympics, but I have no idea whether that's the universal name of this event.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I think that is crazy that they spend so much money. We are having this University Olympics right now, then we will have Winter Olympics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be World Cup?
In 2018. World Football Championship,
yeah,
will be held in Russia,
and something,
as I heard, or can be held.
And something else, if I'm not mistaken, I watched the opening of this University Olympics, and I mean, spent so much money on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Russia always takes it to extremes.
They could spend that money on, I don't know, healthcare. Education?
Oh, if it has to do something with sports, the money could be spent on sport facilities for youngsters. And as far as I know, these University Olympics, Russia is criticized for sending experienced sportsmen and for leaving the inexperienced aside. So when it is time for another Olympic Games, we will not have the reserve. But it is very strange how Russia is leading at University Olympics and how Russia, I'm sorry, sucks at Olympic Games.
I'm going to see our mutual acquaintance,
Julia.
Julia, yeah.
You just told me. I have been very pleased.
Mm-hmm. It actually, last time Daniel boasted about his success with some kind of unusual poetry about some, what was it, some financial service?
Yes, the financial service of the interior.
This week I have something to boast of as well. So this Julia, she's like a representative of our local intelligentsia, yeah?
Yes.
And she rolls in this art circles here. So it's actually what we're going to talk about will be plans for my future exhibition here in Набережные Челны.
Awesome.
Yeah, and what I like about it is that it's going to be, probably, I hope so, it's going to be a very serious venue. So probably either the Central Gallery, or I don't know, so we will talk about it. It's going to be very exciting. Although, I don't really have any material for this gallery, so I have to work
create some.
It, yeah, and it will take probably a few months.
Well, I think you will have to wait. They will not tell you, okay, go and bring.
No, we're sure. Yeah,
what you have next week. I'm sure they will. You will have like 3, 4, maybe 5, 6 months time.
2, 3, 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah.
Or maybe a year. Who knows?
I also have a literature contest to participate in, and I have a month left. And the theme of this contest is. Can you guess, Asya?
I know.
Yes, you know, because I have told you already.
So you are going to write about beard?
No. Second try.
To praise the beard, no.
That's always obvious answer.
Zombies, maybe?
Yay!
Yeah.
I know, that's all we have to talk about, beards and zombies. Oh, so you have to write a short story about zombies.
Just so.
Oh.
And I will absolutely let you read it.
Yeah, of course.
When I have completed it.
I will tell you my opinion. Whether I was moved.
Yes, it will be an unusual one. I already have the idea, but I only have to write it down.
We published our interviews. You have so many fans.
Well, because you have you seen my status on Skype? I advertise it.
Yeah.
You see the difference?
Marketing.
You just post it and you wait. And you do nothing, and I advertise myself. That's why.
See? No, I just think that your interview was better.
Honestly, I am not fishing for a compliment, but I really think that your interview is more complete, aesthetically pleasing to watch. But that's my opinion. Okay, I do have the right to have my own opinion, right?
You do, but
and you hit the questions, which created some.
I think that I'm more proficient with questions. I'm a better interviewer than interviewee, actually. So,
well, because there were two questions which followed one another about writing and about keeping a diary, and that confused Daniil, I think. Because at first I was talking about writing, and then I started answering your second question about diaries, and that seemed as if it was just the same question. But anyway, I don't think that anybody noticed it except Daniil.
You have one interview in reserve.
I think that when we are together in the St. Petersburg again, we'll conduct 3 interviews. Oh no, 2. I will not be interviewed again. I don't want to. It's going to be a letdown again. So, introduction. Again, to 15 minutes. Not 15 minutes, actually, 10. But yeah, introduction. And we decided that today we're going to make a surprise for Arthur. So, Arthur, please, can you introduce us?
Oh my goodness, that's not fair, because you guys spent some time preparing it, and I
like your...
I am taken unawares, I can't really think of anything. Okay. Oh.
Why did you do that? It's an ambush.
Okay, she is the soul of our team. She has these fantastic smiles, and it's so great to shoot her, and it's so great to listen to answers when she is talking about art.
Yes, I think that it's the only topic that I can talk about properly, because the press is just okay.
Yeah, she's landish.
Yeah, okay.
Hey. And he is busy writing something else, something, not else. Something. He is busy growing another beard. Mm-hmm. And he's Daniil.
Yay!
Yay!
That is so much not fair.
No, it is fair. That's a whole.
I'm saying rubbish. Well,
your interview was spontaneous. Why your introduction cannot be?
Because I have to think about. It's not about. It's not me. I'm talking about. It's you. So that's why I need time. Mm.
Okay. No, now you talk about you. So introduce yourself, please.
Oh. She's always talking rubbish.
Not true. Not true.
Unless
the most popular member of the Linguistov team.
I wouldn't call myself the most popular member of our team, but she's talking rubbish. She likes talking to her dog, talking rubbish to her dog, and she's Asia.
Yay! But anyway,
Randish is a torturer today.
I'm asking to do that again. Ask me beforehand.
That would not be interesting.
Last Wednesday, the president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, was deposed by the Egyptian army. It should be reminded that after the abolition of Hosni Mubarak in 2010, Mohamed Morsi was elected in 2011 by the narrow majority of people's votes. In the period between the abolition and the elections, the power had belonged to the military. Now they seem to have returned it, but to what ends? It is yet unclear. What is clear, though, is their brutality. Monday this week, in Cairo, Mohamed Morsi's supporters, by the evidence of many, were just praying in front of the building where the deposed president is believed to be held, and which is controlled by the army. The soldiers opened fire with live ammunition. Casualties were 51 killed and more than 400 injured, crippled and wounded. On the side of the soldiers, it was 1 and 2 respectively. A black day in the history of Egypt's army, that day was called. This confrontation is the bloodiest since the time of the 2010 protests. The army now should be aware of the revengeful, since the sacred month of Ramadan has begun, and Mohamed Morsi is a Muslim with the Islamist view of Egypt's future. It's a general Muslim holiday. It's called a holiday, but it's actually a holy month. Hosni Mubarak's was, how do you call it, secular or not religious?
Sorry.
I have to look up. Secular, yes.
Okay.
So you will have to cut it, what has been said before. Hosni Mubarak.
Mubarak. She's not going to cut it.
Oh, you know me too well. Okay.
I know you too well.
Hosni Mubarak was a secular government, and Mohamed Morsi's was a religious one. So Ramadan does mean something to his supporters.
They have this Muslim Brotherhood.
The Muslim Brotherhood. Oh, they are declared by the army as having been involved. That massacre was called a terrorist attack by the army, which is ridiculous because the evidence was that those people were they were protesting, but the protest was peaceful.
Well, I think that it's the leading theme of the whole protest in Egypt, that the protests, they don't really do anything. It's just that the army itself triggers these the massacres. They use this gas on just peaceful protests. So
yes, in connection with that accident, I remembered my yesterday, which I spent in Petrozavodsk at the military facility. There I, fortunately, was released from the army's grasp till autumn, but before receiving that leave, we had to listen to the lecture of
that's exciting
lecture of some high official of the Karelian military facilities. He was a colonel, and it was a soldier of a man, soldier to his bones, and he talked about how important is the army, for our state, how all young men have to serve in the army to be pillars for their country, for their homeland, and how universities are too liberal and to make pansies of men. So, well, it was quite annoying for me, but I had to listen to it without responding. I want to, desperately. Oh, I just didn't. Otherwise, I would have been taken in the army. So, and after all this talk about the army, our brave, courageous, and mighty army, and after these accidents in Egypt and in Syria, where the army shows itself as a brutal and cruel instrument of the government, it was very hard for me to control myself, as this colonel was speaking. The army in our country has not been so cruel to people yet, but who knows?
What's the point of having an army? Is it just to prevent the some inner just protests of the
people? The Ministry of the Interior can manage protests itself. Mm. We have this riot police, as you know. In the theory of international relations, there is an opinion that if every country in the world had an army and nuclear weapons, there would have been no wars at all, no armed conflicts, because every country would be scared of each other. But it is not so in the modern world. Each day witnesses a beginning of a new conflict or a continuation of an old one.
I would like to go to the army.
You're ruining my anti-army protest.
Why? I imagine you like this. What was the title of this film that we already talked about?
G.I. Joe?
Yeah, G.I.
Yeah.
Joe.
G.I. Joe. No, you have to go to Israel if you want to serve, because they have that Israel Defense Force, where women...
I want to go to the Russian army. I mean, well, I don't want to go to the army. I said I would like to go if they invited me to. Yeah.
What would you do there?
Fight?
There is no one to fight. You'll be like a cheap workforce there.
Doesn't matter. It would train my character. It would somehow make me more mature.
Oh. poor you.
No.
Well, I want to keep this illusion about the Russian army. That it's a cool place.
You know, they do say that the army strengthens your character, your will. But on the other hand, if you need an ear or two in the army to strengthen your character, then you're a weak person.
True.
The army isn't a necessity, but it is made so.
Aren't there any other ways to strengthen your character apart from the army?
Self-control, exercises.
Exercises of
body and will.
Probably you have this image of an American army.
I don't even know how to explain it. I just said I would like to go to the army. That's it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, and I don't know what I'm going to do there, and I don't know what for, but why not?
What else do we have?
What else do you have? Now it's your turn.
I have a funny piece of news about the Snowden case.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. I like funny piece of news.
Well, it's not that funny, but all right.
So we went to laugh.
It's not going to make you laugh, trust me. Russia goes...
How is it funny, then?
It was funny for me. Russia goes retro to keep Kremlin secrets. The Russian agency charged with safeguarding Kremlin communications... Oh, sorry.
Kremlin?
That was Kremlin, yeah.
they are coming for you.
So while I have the time, I will finish this piece of news. Kremlin Communication is said to be opting for a low-tech solution to secure top-secret messages in the wake of the NSA surveillance scandal. Typewriters. So the Russian newspaper reports that the Federal Guard Agency, known by the acronym FSO, has placed an order for 11,000 worth of electric typewriters. Unnamed source said, After scandals with the distribution of secret documents by WikiLeaks, the exposes by Edward Snowden, reports about Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev being listened in on during his visit to the G20 summit in London, it has been decided to expand the practice of creating paper documents. That retro approach to security would have two distinct advantages. Not only would it keep sensitive communications outside vulnerable computer networks, but since each typewriter has subtle and identifiable differences in typeface, it would make it easier to track down potential leakers.
I imagine that divine sound that is typed in the office of that ministry. I love the sound of keys, both typewriter and computer ones.
Yeah, I like it too.
Maybe that was the reason. There was a strained atmosphere, too nervous.
Well, you both guys write. Do you prefer typing or do you prefer writing by hand? You said that you keep diaries.
Again, it's a bit different, yeah? When it comes to diaries, it's not really important. I can write or I can type whatever I have available. But when it comes to fiction, then typing, because I just get tired of writing. I'm so not used to write these days with my hand, so typing. But I always envied those people who do this traditional writing and then have these manuscripts, and I think that's it's really cool. Daniel, you write with your hand, yeah?
Well, sometimes I do. Short stories in English are written by hand. My first stories in English, at least, were written by hand in notebooks. But some have been or are being typed. I do have a copybook and a pen, which has not been used. So if I happen to come up with an idea and a laptop is unavailable, I will write down. By the year 2050, Earth is expected to see her 9th billion dweller. Now we have 7 billion, and 60 years ago we had something between 2 and 3 billion. Keep it in mind, never forget about that. Now that you have done that, prepare your mind against blowing and the next row of numbers. The thing is that since 1950, crop yields throughout the planet have been rising as slowly as 2.2% a year. As of now, it is 1.3% a year, with prospects of further decrease. Farmers have been irrigating the soil, saturating it with fertilizers for decades, but soon we are likely to bump into the limit of growth per hectare, because in nature nothing is indefinite. And yet, the number of people and their needs seem to be growing faster than the crops. The problem of global hunger is daunting enough these days, let alone the year 2050. What does the future hold for us? Billions dying of malnutrition, or innovative, progressive, revolutionary decisions in literally the field of agriculture? Optimistic scientists believe that the man genius can reforge some laws of nature. With the help of biogenetic engineering, crops may be augmented so that their photosynthesis will be more efficient and lasting. These supercrops, or mutacrops, call it what you like, may be able to feed the entire population of Earth for years to come since their advent. Now, however, as they have not yet been developed, pessimistic scientists grieve at how scarce is the funding of such projects and how slow the research is going.
I once read an article about possible solutions to world hunger when, you know, when, as you said, we reached this 9 billion...
dweller.
Yeah, so... one of the options was this genetically modified, genetically grown products like rice, etc. So, but the second one was moving on to eating insects. They say that right now there is a tendency, especially in some, these fancy restaurants, they start developing this culture of eating insects because, well, they are pretty...
multiple.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. And it's pure protein. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that actually is an obstacle is that we are, well, do not like the whole concept of eating an insect. So they said that it's one of the solutions.
I don't think that there will be a global problem of hunger in the future. I think that all, as Daniel mentioned, all this genetic engineering will take place, and there will be different types of meat produced in laboratories, not talking about all these vegetables and fruits. How's that called? When the plants are grown in water, hydroponic agriculture.
What? Mm-hmm.
Hydroponics. Yeah, it's called hydroponics.
Hydroponics. What do they grow in water?
Well, it's a very effective way of farming. They take a very big tank of water, and then they put fish in there, small fish. Mm-hmm. This fish grow, and they produce something, right? They eat, and...
all right.
The remains of their existence, of their living in this water... Oh, my God. My Lola just fell on the bicycle. So,
is she all right?
Yeah, she's all right. She just got shot. Pardon. Okay, anyway. Then they put some vegetables in this water, like tomatoes or lettuce or cucumbers. And this water is already rich in these nutrients...
Dead fish?
Not dead. The fish is already sold.
Oh,
but
what
is left from... I chose the wrong word. What is left from fish? Very good for plants. So they put tomatoes and cucumbers and lettuce in there, and they receive the crop, which is like twice, three, or maybe like, I don't know, four times more. Traditional farming, but I don't know the exact process. I have to. You can check it out. It's for hydroponics.
I presume it will have a different taste and smell.
No, actually, it's the same. Those countries which have a problem with land use it. I know that in Israel it's very popular. Maybe something like that will take place in future. So, whatever.
I'm still thinking about the insects. Do you remember that tree, awful tree in St. Petersburg?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, which was wrapped into that thing, and under that thing were insects.
Was it a cobweb?
Cobweb, yes, it was. So will you eat even one of them? They were rich with protein.
But
marvelous.
The point is just to not tell the... visitor that it's this disgusting worm. Just say that it's our special.
Yeah.
Make an insect mush. Mush insects.
Yeah. Mushed insects.
Again. I suppose it will look very much like mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
As for this hydroponic, I wouldn't want to know what was used to grow the crops that I eat, so I don't think that I would like to be informed about it. Although they do, they use this, how can you call it politely?
Poo. Fish is poo.
Fish is poo. Yeah, exactly. So
excrement, yes. This is the word.
I was trying to remember the word. I couldn't.
But anyway, they use cow's poo, yeah, and horses, yeah. Then birds, and so... What's the difference? Yeah, so it's just
but the point is that eventually you get fish you can sell and vegetables you can sell. It's pretty effective when it comes to the sources.
Maybe it is. And besides vegetarians, we will have all these insectarians and hydroponics.
True. Let's move on to our biology section. A beard's second. A beard's second is a measurement of length based on the distance that a beard hair grows in 1 second of time. The beard second is quite small, since hair grows at a very slow rate. The exact length that this equals is the basis for some debate, and some sources cite it at about 10 nanometers, while other sources use only 5 nanometers. A nanometer is 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter. Due to both the silly nature of a beard second and the fact that it is not perfectly quantifiable as a standard measurement, it is not officially used in science. Since 1 year consists of about 31.5 million seconds, using a 5 nanometer measurement of a beard second, then a beard grows at about 15 centimeters per year. Another instance of a silly or unusual measurement is a smoot. One smoot is about 170 centimeters in length, and it is based on the height of Oliver Smoot, a student at Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1958. Oliver Smoot was used by his fellow students to measure the length of the Harvard Bridge, which was about 364.4 smoots, just about 620 meters in length. Both the beard second and the smoot can be used as units for conversion in the Google calculator through the search engine input, which uses the 5 nanometer value.
I'm wondering at what speed my beard is growing.
Is it true? Is it like 15 centimeters per year?
Oh no, it grows at a speed of 2 centimeters a year.
2 centimeters
a year? At a maximum. So, whether it's something wrong with me or the scientists are wrong.
It must be individual, because it's...
Well, my beard is too individual.
What about your...
I want it to grow
hair
more.
Does it grow at the same speed, your hair? Does it grow faster?
My hair grows... my upper hair grows faster than my...
Upper beard grows faster
than upper beard and lower beard.
Well, but you see, the whole concept of beard is in this waiting when it grows. If it grew fast, you wouldn't cherish it that much.
Well, I do agree with it.
You would not cherish it anymore. You would like, oh, okay, I can cut it. It'll grow anyway in a couple of days again. Yeah, that would not be that interesting, and anybody could grow it. Like, should I grow a beard for the next weekend? That's not funny.
Yeah. So we have to find some kind of a compromise.
But anyway, let's move on to the story.
Wait, hold on.
What?
I just have some questions.
Okay.
You guys, you being professional beardologists, can you enlighten me? How old is a boy when his beard starts appearing?
When I was 16... I had a mustache, but not a single hair down below.
Uh-huh.
Only when I was 18, the beard started to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I shaved it, and shaved it.
What happens if you don't shave it?
It will grow, I believe.
It will grow.
Yes, it will grow and grow and grow. Well, in my case, it doesn't grow longer, it grows thicker.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I suppose I will never have a beard as long as 5 centimeters or 10 centimeters. No, it will be thick, but it will be not longer than 3 centimeters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, and Landish's piece of news, as it always does, moved me. Write another part of the story. The Adventures of a Bearded Man in a Beardless World. Part 4. Our hero, happily blessed with facial hair, was taken by the semi-legendary Edward Snowden to the underground of the United States of America. The man's multiple applications for political asylum was but a deceive. Officially, he resided in Venezuela and was, according to the media, sipping cocktail after cocktail, lying on some beach, surrounded with curvaceous Latin muchachos. In fact, he organized a rebellious movement, Who If Not Us, and embarked on a sacred mission. You see, he said to Richard Barbidge, they were sitting at a table in a subterranean bunker. When the beer duster fell, the United States government saw an opportunity they could not but grasp. All world dictators lost their signs of masculinity, resolve, and leadership, and people started looking up to westernized, beardless politicians. You, Mr. Babich, are the one and only bearded man left on the planet. If you were a citizen of some Middle East country, you would have already been made a president or sheikh or whatever their hierarchy looks like. But I don't want to be a ruler, objected Richard Babich. I am a simple man. Exactly, smiled Edward Snowden, which is why our plan is to restore beers to the world's mere population. All of them, even to those who have long ago, before the big disaster, lost hope to grow facial hair. He scratched his own chin. I'm ready to do what I can, said Richard solemnly. The charisma of Edward Snowden moved him to act. Our scientists will examine your beard carefully, and then we will have to transport you somewhere. What for? Was Richard Babbage's outcry. You will know after your beard has been studied. So it was. A thorough examination of our hero's organism began. Women were not accepted to the laboratory for understandable reasons. The results showed that Richard Babbage's facial hair grew at speed of 15 nanometers a second, or 3 beard seconds, which was 3 times faster than average. Needless to say, his beard had already turned into a natural scarf. Also was taken and copied the blueprint of his DNA. So, what do we do now? Asked Richard Babbage. We are flying to Haiti, declared Snowden, ignoring surprise in our hero's face. Time to combine genetic technology and voodoo magic.
Mm.
An intrigue for the next time?
Yeah. Yeah. Dear listeners,
thank you very much for your activity. We feel that we are becoming more and more popular.
So keep on leaving your comments.
And please write to us.
Write to us. Yeah, if you listen to our podcast, we would appreciate if you sent us some questions or maybe something you'd like us to talk about. And we do a lot of creative things. Visit our website, www.linguistic.ru, and stay tuned.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I will see you next week.
Yeah. Okay. See you. Goodbye.
Lots of books and discussions at www.linguistov.ru.